Okay, thank you everybody for coming. Once again, I'd like to thank Rabbi Ovi Jacob, for enlightening us with his Torah and for agreeing. He's a world traveler, and not only a world traveler, he's a United States national traveler, and he just got off a plane. So thank you very much, Ovi, as always. And without further ado, Rabbi Ovi Jacob.
Thank you very much, Dr. Friedman. Okay, it's great to be here. I look forward to a chance to learn with the people of Renat every year, at least a few times, myself and my wife. So it's always a pleasure. Thank you very much to Dr. Friedman for organizing, as always. I figured this year, instead of talking about Parshat HaShavua, we could talk about Inyanei Diyoma, as we're very, very close and approaching Tisha B'Av. I figured we could talk about a topic that is, I think, everybody has heard of the topic, but very few people have actually gone through the sugya of what is the halachic imperative, and as well, aside from the halachic imperative itself, what is the practice? And, you know, most of the time in halacha, you have a halacha, and people follow the halacha. And it's very straightforward. The Shulchan Aruch says X, Y, Z, and people generally follow it. But when it comes to Tearing Kriya specifically nowadays, you have many different practices, and I thought I could explore with you guys where those practices emanate from and what is both accepted practice and as well what the halacha says. Very straightforward. So before we jump in, I thought it was appropriate to talk about Tearing Kriya Bizman Hazeh. When we talk about Tearing Kriya here, we're not talking about for Avelut on the personal level. We're talking instead for Avelut for the Chorban HaBayit, or Avelut associated with a change in status of Israel and Yerushalayim. Okay? So we're not going to talk at all about Tearing Kriya in the context of personal Avelut. We're going to talk about Tearing Kriya surrounding Inyanei Eretz Yisrael, and specifically tied to the Chorban HaBayit. So because of that, I thought it was very appropriate to talk about it now, just on, you know, on the eve of Tisha B'Av, on the, you know, as we get ready to go into the final Shabbos and then Tisha B'Av, and hopefully to emerge from that. So before I begin, I figure we could do, I know my father-in-law is a big lover of saying survey says, so I thought we could start off with the survey says. Okay, how many people in the room when you visit the Kotel Tear Kriya? Okay, one, two, less than 50%. Okay, how many people in the room when you visit the Arei Yehuda Tear Kriya? Also less than 50%. Here, zero. Okay. So, let's go into the halacha. We're going to start with the Gemara. There's one very clear source. And then in addition to that, we'll read the Shulchan Aruch. And then we'll go back to the survey says. And we'll have a chance to look at some of the original sources that the actual practice nowadays emanates from. So before we jump into the Gemara and the minhag to tear kriya, or I shouldn't say minhag, the halacha to tear kriya, is based on two psukim from Sefer Yishayahu. So we'll read the Gemara first, then we'll read a little bit from the parak in Sefer Yishayahu to understand what's happening in that parak. And then in addition to that, we'll go straight from the Gemara to the Halacha. So usually, I guess the preference is to do the Lamdas and understand the Sugya before you get to the Halacha. But I think in this Sugya, it's important to look specifically at what the Halacha is first, see what Shulchan Aruch says, and then after seeing what Shulchan Aruch says, to understand how Achronim, who have followed the Shulchan Aruch, have understood the Halacha differently throughout the ages. So let's start with the Gemara. Gemara is from Moed Katan. This parak from Moed Katan is where we have many of the Inyanei Avelut, both on the personal level, and as well here talking about the Chorban of Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash. So Amar Rabbi Chelbo, Amar Ula B'Yira, Amar Rabbi Elazar. Haroe Arei Yehuda B'Chorbanan, Omer, Arei Kotshecha Hayu Midbar, Kama, V'Koreya. So this means somebody who sees the Arei Yehuda. What are the Arei Yehuda? Arei Yehuda are defined as what? Is it a strict definition? Is it a loose definition? So for our purposes, we'll say the Arei Yehuda are the pieces of land that are inside of the portion of the tribe of Yehuda. Okay? It doesn't mean specifically Midbar Yehuda, or what we call Yehuda v'Shomron nowadays. It means areas of land in Israel that are inside of the Yerusha of Shevet Yehuda. Why would Shevet Yehuda have a special Yerusha? Because Shevet Yehuda is where the Melucha, where David HaMelech emanates from, and where the concept of Jewish sovereignty emanates from. So anybody who sees any land that was in the portion of Shevet Yehuda, in which it is Bechor Banan, we have to understand what the word Bechor Banan means, okay? From the word Chorban, but what does that mean specifically for us? He has to tear Kriya. He reads this Pasuk from Sefer Yishayahu, and then tears Kriya. Next, Yerushalayim b'chorbanah, but not just the Arei Yehuda, but Yerushalayim itself. Okay, he says, Omer, from the same pasuk, Tzion midbar haita, Yerushalayim shmama, v'koraya. Next. And now a third category, Beit HaMikdash b'chorbano, Omer, the next pasuk from this parak in Yeshayahu, Beit Kodshenu v'tifartenu, Asher hilalucha avotenu, Hayalis refat esh, v'chom machmadenu, Hayalach hariva, comma, again, v'koraya. So each of these cases, if you see, the Gemara seems to be very straightforward. You have three different categories of land, which you, if you see them in what's called Churbanan, you have to tear Kriya. The first one is Arei Yehuda, the next one is Yerushalayim itself, and then the third one is the Beit HaMikdash. So when we did survey says, we had about 50% of the people in the room tear Kriya when they go to the Kotel. So let's assume that when we say we go to the Kotel, we mean we're tearing Kriya specifically on the site of the Beit HaMikdash, okay? But in Yerushalayim, when people get to Yerushalayim, you drive into the gates, Yerushalayim, you see the sign, Bruchim Habayim to Yerushalayim. I don't think I've ever met anyone in my life who at that point tears Kriya, as it, maybe somebody here has. And certainly when you get to the Arei Yehuda, also the same type of concept. So important to note that if you read the Gemara itself, it gives you three categories, the Arei Yehuda, Yerushalayim, and then the area of the Beit HaMikdash itself. The minhag is prevalent among many people to tear kriya at the Kotel, or when they see the Makom HaMikdash, where they see the Temple Mount. But in general, almost nobody, at least that I've ever met, tears kriya at any of these other places. Okay, so now before we continue in the Gemara, let's look at the psukim from Sefer Yeshayahu.
Oh,
beautiful. So you have a number of questions. Let me ask you an even better question. Okay, how do you get to the Kotel?
You walk down from the
old city. So you're already in Yerushalayim.
Right.
So the first question that the Gemara is going to deal with, the very next question, hold on to that point, right, is going to be, how do you tear Kriya when you get to the Makom HaMikdash? You've already seen the Arei Yehuda, and you've already seen Yerushalayim. Okay? Right. And then, exactly like you're saying, so you're always going to have this issue of, how could it be that you're tearing Kriya for one when you don't see the other one? Okay?
Or you can't be fast.
Very good, or you can make a bigger tear. The Gemara is going to give you a couple of options, but before we get into that, I don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of the halacha, because tachlis, nobody really keeps that side of the halacha. You get to the Kotel, and maybe you tear Kriya.
Right?
What? Okay, so let's jump in, okay? Sefer Yeshayahu, this is toward the end of Sefer Yeshayahu, and Amos Chacham actually categorizes these psukim from Parak Samach Dalet in the same category as the second half of Parak Samach Gimel, and he refers to the whole piece as Techina al Yemei HaChorban. Okay, and what happens here is you have a very short tefillah, you have a techina, very appropriate to read on the eve of Tisha B'Av, in which there is basically a lament as to what has happened to the Jewish people and what has happened to Yerushalayim following the Chorban. Okay, so I'll read to you the full psukim. I won't go through the whole thing because it's 10 or 11 psukim, but the last aspect of it is what is the basis for our Gemara, and it's what Amos Chacham calls siyum betchina or betluna ala chorban. So he calls this basically a complaint or a consolation associated with the chorban. So I'll read to you all four of the psukim, and you'll see the ones that we tear kriya from in their context. Okay, vata Adonai avinu ata. Anachnu hachomer va'ata yotzreinu u'ma'ase yadcha kulanu. Okay, so everybody recognizes those words. Anachnu hachomer va'ata yotzreinu. Something that you would start to think about. Yamim noraim ve'al tiktzof Adonai ad ma'od va'al la'ad tizkor avon. I don't know if this is in the Ashkenazic Tachanun, but these exact words are found in different aspects. Not exact, but part of the Sephardic Tachanun. Hein habet na'amcha kulanu, also from Tachanun. Arei kod shecha hayu midbar. And this is the part that the Gemara mentions. Arei kod shecha hayu midbar. Tzion midbar haita Yerushalayim shmama. So you start off with Arei kod shecha hayu midbar. Arei kod shecha here, the Gemara understands, refers to specifically as Arei Yehuda. Midbar haita midbar Tzion midbar haita Yerushalayim shmama. So that's the source for tearing Kriya by both the Arei Yehuda, the Arei Kod Shecha, and then secondly by Yerushalayim itself. Beit Kodshenu utifartenu asher hilalucha avotenu hayal esreifat esh v'chol machamadenu hayal achorba So this is something that could be right out of the keynote for Tisha B'Av. Literally, you see in Sefer Yeshayahu the lament associated with the Chorban HaBayit. And from this lament, the Gemara understands three specific halakhic categories. It's not on the source sheet. If you look in the source, the first source, it says Yeshayahu Samach Dalet Yud. Oh, okay. So I'm reading to you the context of the psukim from Samach Dalet Yeshayah. The specific psukim I read are Yeshayah Samach Dalet, Pasuk Zion to Pasuk Yud Aleph. Okay, that's the last piece of the, let's say, the Tchina al Chorban Yerushalayim in Sefer Yeshayah. Okay? All right, so let's jump back to the halakha. Let's finish up the Gemara, get to your question. So the Gemara continues and says, Korea al Mikdash. Umosif al Yerushalayim. You first tear kriya on the mikdash, and then you add to Yerushalayim. So, like we mentioned before, it's a little bit tricky. You tear your let's say your ikar kriya on the mikdash, and then you add for Yerushalayim. But in order to get to the mikdash, you have to go to Yerushalayim first. So then Gemara says, Uraminu, we have a question. Echad hashomea ve'echad haroe, kevin shehigia litzofim. What's tzofim here? Harhat Sofim, where you have this beautiful view of the Temple Mount. Korea, the Korea al Mikdash bifnei atzmo va'al Yerushalayim bifnei atzma. You get to Har Tzofim and you have this view, so you can imagine, like, you know, the stories of the different Rishonim when they finally get to Yerushalayim. The story always is, and when I got to Har Tzofim, I was able to see the Makom HaMikdash for the first time, and it was this very emotional moment. So here it says, when you get to that point, you tear two times, it seems like, for Yerushalayim and for the Beit HaMikdash. And the Gemara answers, V'lo kasha, there's no question, had the paga b'mikdash b'resha, v'had the paga b'Yerushalayim b'resha. It all depends which angle you're coming from. If you're coming from the east side, then you will most probably see the Makom HaMikdash before you see the rest of Yerushalayim. But if you're coming from Har Tzofim, then you're going to have to see Yerushalayim and go through Yerushalayim and go through the old city before you get to the Temple Mount. Okay? We'll get a little bit deeper into that, because I know the geography doesn't work out perfectly.
If you're coming from that angle
before you see Yerushalayim, exactly. So now, if you read the Gemara, it doesn't seem like there's any machloket whatsoever. It seems very straightforward. There are three different places. There are the Arei Yehuda, there's Yerushalayim Begadol, and then there's the Makom HaMikdash. We're required to tear kriya for all three of them. Okay, so let's keep going. Let's look at the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch is even more straightforward and categorical than the Gemara. We'll read through the Shulchan Aruch very quickly, and then we'll start to get into the sugi itself. Haroe Arei Yehuda b'chor banan omer Arei kodshecha hayu mibar v'korei. Exactly what we read in the Gemara. Ve'eino chayav likroa ela kishemagia samuch lahem kimin hatzofim liYerushalayim. Exactly like what we just read in our Gemara. Haroe et Yerushalayim b'chor bana omer tzion haitam mibar shemama v'korei. Okay, what do you notice? The first interesting thing you notice in the Shulchan Aruch, puts as one seif Haroe Arei Yehuda b'chor banan, and as a separate seif Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash together. Okay, so that's your first hint as to there might be something going on. Let me actually ask the question more broadly. Are all three chiyuvim for kriya, are all three times in which one is required to tear kriya, are all three of those equal chiyuvim? Are all of them emanating from the same, from the same activity? Or perhaps they have different bases in halacha, okay? And that's going to be the takeoff point for the sugya. Okay, let's finish up the Shulchan Aruch. He continues in the same way the Gemara did. Mehechan chayav l'kroa min hatzofim. Okay? Ba'achar kach kishiyira hamikdash korea kera acher. So somebody here now approaches Yerushalayim from Har Tzofim. He sees Yerushalayim. He tears a kriya, and then he gets to the Makom HaMikdash, or he sees the Makom HaMikdash, and he tears an additional keter. V'chol kriya tefach, and that's the shiur for it. V'im ba derech hamidbar, if you come from the other angle, sha'az roa hamikdash tchila, korea al hamikdash tefach, v'achar kach kishiyira Yerushalayim, mosif al kera rishon kol shehu. So this is important. Why? Not because of the technical details of the length of the kriya, but it appears as though if somebody is coming from the midbar and sees the Chorban Habayit first, he tears his initial kriya, and then he continues and tears that same kriya slightly more. So what it implies, and the same thing as you see the categorization from the Shulchan Aruch, it implies that Yerushalayim
and the Beit HaMikdash, their kriya emanates from the same source. Okay? So now if I would say to you, why do you tear kriya for Yerushalayim? Why do you tear kriya on the Arei Yehuda? What would be the answer? Seemed like a very straightforward answer after reading the Gemara. What would it be? Why would you tear kriya for these things? What are you mourning? It's an easy one. Oh, where'd you get that from? Okay. Who says that in the Gemara or the Shulchan Aruch, the loss of Jewish sovereignty? Right, so all we saw, forget about, and by the way, this is a good answer. We're going to talk about that in just a minute. Okay? B'chor banan means what? Let's assume that we're dealing, let's just stay very, very simple. Chor banan would mean destruction. Okay? So there are cities of Yehuda that are destroyed, there's Yerushalayim which is destroyed, and there's the Beis HaMikdash which is destroyed. Okay? Let me give also just a window into the second half of the shiur. Right now, today, of these three categories, which are actually in a state of what we would call destruction? Only the Makom HaMikdash. Anybody who's been to...
parts of Hebron?
Okay, parts of Hebron potentially. That's a good answer.
And many other cities, Beitar.
Okay, the cities of Yehuda, you could say they're...
Beitar, the old cities, the places where we know where is not Beit Din. It's part of the other...
Okay, very good. I agree that they're part of the Palestinian Authority, but I'm not sure if you're talking about Chor Banan, we mean specifically destruction.
Well, yeah, Beitar was destroyed.
Okay, very good. I accept. Good. Would you say that Yerushalayim is in a state of destruction? It'd be very hard to, right? It'd be hard to say Yerushalayim is in a state of destruction.
Unless you're referring to...
You take your kids to Burger's Bar, it doesn't feel like you're in a state of destruction.
Unless you're referring specifically to Eir David, which was the original Yerushalayim.
Okay.
Archaeological site.
Look, we can kvetch to say that it's in a state of destruction, but do you feel... No. When you get to Yerushalayim, you see the Bruchim Habaim, do you feel like you need to be mourning for Yerushalayim that's in a state of destruction, or do you feel we're so lucky that we get to come visit Yerushalayim? Okay, good. So I think this is universally accepted that I don't think anybody now gets to, maybe there are sects of Jewish people who do, but I think at least in our communities, when we get to Yerushalayim, we don't feel like we're in a state of Chorbanan. Where did you get the idea of Jewish sovereignty from?
Because the question is, when we say Chorbanan, are we talking about the current state of affairs, or are we projecting back on what happened this
week? Okay, so I would assume, this is a good question, I would assume that we're assuming we're looking back at the Chorban HaBayit, and that's specifically why I wanted to read the Psukim from Sefer Yeshayahu and show you, even though the Shulchan Aruch separates Si'if Aleph from Si'if Bet, Si'if Aleph and Si'if Bet are found in the same exact Pasuk in Sefer Yeshayahu. So we might want to separate the three halachic categories and to say that there's Arei Yehuda and Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash, and maybe they're not connected. Maybe they're not connected. But if you look at the Psukim inside, they're all three of the sources for each of the Kriya. Each time there's a Chiyuv of Kriya, each one of those is from the same exact, let's say, subsection of Perek Samach Dalet, and they're even found in the same pasuk. Like the chiyuv for tearing kriya in Arei Yehuda is Arei Kodeshecha Hayu Midbar, and then the second half of the pasuk is Tzion Midbar Haita Yerushalayim Shmama. So to say that it's referring to two separate chiyuvim is a little bit challenging vis-a-vis the sources. I'm not saying it's wrong, and we're about to read a source, we're about to read one of the Achronim who says exactly what you said. So it's obviously a good idea, and it's conceptually makes a lot of sense, but just from reading the sources in the Gemara, I don't see that as much.
There's a difference if you do Mikdash and Yerushalayim first. In the case where Mikdash comes second, each of them are on equal footing. They both do a tefach.
Very good. Okay.
And the other way around, when the mikdash comes first, the other one...
It's one kriya and the second is kosher. Exactly. Okay, very good. So meaning that what? Meaning that if you're tearing...
They're not the same.
And what seems to be the ikar chiyuv? Mikdash. Okay, very good. So this is exactly the point I wanted to get to before we jump into the Levush. Exactly what Dr. Friedman just said. It seems like all of the Avelut, at least in Seif Bet, all of the Avelut that's mentioned, all of the Kriya, emanates from one source. And that is the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. That is why we have Tisha B'Av. That is why the Jewish people mourn throughout the ages. This is the saddest day, the saddest moment in Jewish history, is the Churban HaBayit. And so when you think about what would make sense on a national level to tear Kriya for, the first thing that should come to mind is Churban HaBayit. We have not just this halacha, but there are many halachot that occur in every single day of our lives where we do things Zecher LeMikdash, right? Where we do things, whether it's on Pesach, where we do things, or Chagim, where we do things associated with Korbanot Zecher LeMikdash. But those things are Zecher LeMikdash, they're not necessarily associated with the Avelut of Beit HaMikdash. And there's a distinction between the two. There are certain things that we do associated with the Avelut of Beit HaMikdash. Right, there are, whether it's in terms of minhagim of listening to music during the 9 days, so on and so forth, things that we do in this specific period of time, or things that we do throughout the whole year. Who could think of one example? What's the, you know, minhagim, not halachas? Just some examples of things that we do thinking about the Beit HaMikdash. Okay, I'm not familiar with that minhag. Outside the boundaries of halachic Yerushalayim. Okay, that's one. I'll give you breaking a glass. The two most famous ones that you see all the time: breaking a glass at the chuppah, and what's the other one? Exactly, the unfinished piece in a house. So those are two things that every time you go to a wedding, every time you see somebody's new house, those are two things that scream to us, Beis HaMikdash. We have remnants of the Beis HaMikdash that come up in halacha. For example, while we all say Shir HaMalot on Shabbos, most of us probably don't say Al Naharot Bavel during the rest of the week, I assume. But if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, it says to do that, and people have a minhag during the 9 days to say Al Naharot Bavel before you begin to bench. So there are many, many different minhagim. The purpose is not to go through the different minhagim and halachot associated with memorializing the Churban HaBayit. The purpose is to say that this is not an abnormal halacha, the Ter Kriya. This fits into the context of Jewish history, and it fits into the context of things that Jewish people have done throughout the ages to commemorate the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, to mourn for it. Okay, and you have here something that makes a lot of sense from the standpoint of Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim being connected. You could even say, and the Levush is about to say, that the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash and the mourning over Yerushalayim are very much interconnected. I think the source sheets, thank you very much, Dr. Friedman, for printing out the source sheets. This specific source is a little hard to read, so I'll read it. I recommend not trying to follow along because it's very, very small print, but I'll read it. Haroa Arei Yehuda B'Churbanan V'hu Samuch Lahen Sheroa Ota B'Tov V'Tuv V'hu Kishi'ur Sheyesh Min HaTzofim Ad L'Yerushalayim Al HaRishona Sheroa Yomar Arei Kodshecha Hayu Midbar V'Koreya. Exactly. Shekein Matzinu B'Katuv V'Yavo Anashim Mishchem U'Mishilo U'Mishomron Megulachim U'Kru'ei B'Gadim V'Davka Arei Yehuda Shehem Krovim L'Yerushalayim. So here, you see the Levush connects Arei Yehuda to Yerushalayim. Aval Shar Ayarot, the Eretz Yisrael, Ein Tzarich Likroa Aleihem, V'af Al Gav, the Bahai Kra Arei Yisrael, Namik Tive, Mikol Makom, HaKriya Lo Haita, Ad Shehigia Lemitzpeh, Shehu Me Arei Yehuda. V'kevan Shekara Al HaRishon, Shera'a Shuv Ein Otzarich Likroa Od, Al ha'achirot shoro'e achar kach. Okay? So what you see here, it's very subtle, but what the Levush does is he connects Arei Yehuda to Yerushalayim. Okay? And as you keep going, Ad shi'agia li'Yerushalayim, Shehu ha'kdusha shebahen, k'shehigia le'migdal, I think that says le, I'm not sure what that word is, le'ma? Le'migdal tzofim, but I don't know what migdal tzofim is. O b'makom acher shehu samuch kamo mimigdal tzofim yomar tzion haita midbar shmama v'chazar v'koreya u'mishekarav od ad shi'egil lirot lebeit hamikdash yomar beit kodchenu v'tifartenu asher hiluch avorotenu haya l'sreifat esh v'chol machmadenu haya l'chareva v'chozer v'koreya v'kol kriya hi tefach bein hi b'makom harishonit bein hi b'makom acher. So you have another interesting thing here. In contradistinction to what Dr. Friedman pointed out, each different kriya here is going to be another tefach. What does the Levush do? The Levush essentially connects all three of the kriyot and says There is Arei Yehuda, which is like the furthest level of Kedusha, but still has some type of Kedusha associated with the Makom HaMikdash. Then there's Yerushalayim, and then you finally get from Yerushalayim to the Makom HaMikdash. Each level is getting more and more Kadosh, and because of that, each time you're tearing Kriya in another fashion. Okay? But you would not see any difference between Yerushalayim and the Makom HaMikdash. All of the basis here is what we would have thought, which is very simply Chorban HaBayit. Because there's no Beit HaMikdash, we have an essential aspect of our lives that is not there, which we'll spend all morning on Tisha B'Av thinking about and reading keynote about. But each of those areas, as you approach that level, represents another level up in mourning. Okay, so let's move over to the next page, to the Bach. Okay, and the Bach writes like this. So let's read from V'chein Katav Beit Yosef, okay? V'chein Katav Beit Yosef, u'kishakein ha-minhag, shalo likroa ela al are Yehuda, dafka, ela al are Yehuda dafka. Ad kan u'pashat hu, dahai are Yehuda b'chorbanan, dika'amar. What are we referring to here? Hainu afilu yesham yishuv kol Afilu Yesham Yishuv. That means Arei Yehuda, even if there are Jewish people living, there's a Yishuv of Jewish people in the Arei Yehuda. Kol Shiyad Ha'umot Sholetet Alav B'Chorbanan Mikri. So this is exactly the point. I know in your little head you had the entire Bach, so you just pulled it right out.
When was the Bach?
Bach is late 1600s, but don't quote me on that. I'm not positive. This is from memory, he might already be the 1700s, but I believe it's late 1600s into the 1700s. Anyone who has any other, I'm pretty sure it's late 1600s, but don't quote me. If somebody else checks it up, you can change that. The point that's being made here by the Bach is something that's different. He says any time that, even if there's a group of Jewish people living there, so what would you say Chorbanan is? Chorbanan doesn't mean that it's a destroyed area where there's no Jews. It means that it's Yad Ha'umot Sholetet Alav B'Chorbanan Mikre. Taha Mitzpeh Shekra'o Aleha Hayashem Yishuv. Okay, Mitzpeh, which was an area that they tore Kriya on in the Pesukim that were just quoted in the Levush, that was the name of a Yishuv im Rov Miyudim. There were many Jews there. V'kasdim Anshei Melchama Da'adayin Lo Yadu Heim Sheneharag Gedalia. This was the group that killed Gedalia. V'et Kol Yehudim Asher Hayu Itob Mitzpeh Va'af Al Pi Ken Karu Bigdeim B'nei Shehaita Nichbeshet Tachad Yad Melech Bavel. Because this area was conquered under the hands of Melech Bavel, this was a reason to tear Kriya. So even though you had a big area of Jewish people living there, so long as it was not under the Shilton, under the sovereignty of the Jewish people, you would still be tearing Kriya. So now, start to think, when the Bach is, or let's say in, 1920, there is, even in the late 1800s, groups of Jewish people start coming back to Israel, and, the first Aliyah and the second Aliyah, and as Jewish people start coming to Israel, so you have a real Yishuv there, but there is not Jewish sovereignty, and because there's no Jewish sovereignty, there is still this halachic imperative to tear Kriya when you see these areas in Arei Yehuda. We're not going to read anything that the Bach has to say about Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash, but the Bach very clearly makes a distinction between the Arei Yehuda and the Makom HaMikdash, okay? The Bach is clearly stating the Arei Yehuda, like the Shulchan Aruch does, it's two separate se'ifim. The Arei Yehuda are a function of Jewish sovereignty, whereas the Makom HaMikdash and Yerushalayim Begadol are a function of the Chorban Bayit. And you can understand this very, very simply, as we're going to read in a moment from Rav Shechter in Be'ikvei HaTzon, that one aspect of mourning is the fact that we don't have control over our lives, over our yishuv, over our sustenance. We're living under the hand of a foreign ruler, and historically for the Jewish people, foreign rulers have not been a good place to live inside of. Obviously, the United States is very different than anything else that's happened historically, but Bigadol, it has not been a good situation for the Jewish people when they haven't been the sovereign people in the land. Okay, so that's a reason to tear Kriya when you see Ar Makom, Eretz Yisrael, specifically the Arei Yehuda, which is the seed of Ar Melucha, as a place in which the Jewish people don't have sovereignty. So that's an area in which we're going to tear Kriya. But when it comes to the Beit HaMikdash, there our mourning is for something totally different. There it's about we can't give korbanot, we can't have the Nisuch HaMayim on Sukkot, we can't give korban Pesach together, we don't have Aliyah LaRegel. That is something that has to do with religion and worship and praising Hashem in the highest level possible. And that's distinct from Jewish sovereignty. Jewish sovereignty allows us to do all of these things and allows us to have a Sanhedrin and a Beit Din and Jewish law and to live comfortably. But that is separate from the mourning of the Chorban. Nobody would ever break a glass under the chuppah because we lack Jewish sovereignty in the Arei Yehuda. But when we think about the times in which we're most happy, you build a new house, you have a wedding, you're about to start something new, so that's an area in which we understand the greatest level of simcha we can have is at some level, you know, is gauged downward.
Why are you then not having Hebron because they're under Darius C?
Okay. So we have a source for that. Hold the point. Let's first just read the Lamdas from Rav Schechter, and then we'll get specifically into that because it's very... let's say it's a very it's a touchy subject, not just because of the political situation, but also because it's not really clear what it means that they're under Area C, if that's under Jewish sovereignty or under the Palestinian Authority. Give it a second, and we'll read a source on it. I'm not going to engage in any political discussion, but just read, you know, just read the sources to see what different Achronim say about it. Tachlis. Forget about Beit Lechem. Have you ever thought, you know, in 1920 when the Jewish people, or 1900 when the Jewish people came back to Eretz Yisrael, were they tearing Kriya over the Arei Yehuda? Possibly, but probably not, Bigadol. But when it comes to Yerushalayim and the Chorban Beis HaMikdash, it's not universal, but most people at least one or two times in their life have torn Kriya when they visit the Kotel. So there has been, in terms of practice, forget about the Halacha, in terms of practice, one type of Kriya is something that is done and is accepted, and the other one generally is not accepted.
Did Bach got this from somewhere, from a story about the governor,
he uses that as an example. He uses that as an example, but it's because if you look back in Lavush, we didn't quote all of those psukim, but if you look back into Lavush, don't do it because you'll strain your eyes, I promise. He quotes other psukim in which it talks about Jewish people who, after the Chorban, come back and see these different areas. They come from Shomron and they come from all these different areas, and they see and they tear Kriya because they're so sad. So he's mentioning that in those scenarios, there, even once they built up a yeshuv in Eretz Yisrael, it was still a place in which you tear Kriya. He's talking the Bach. It's a good question. Where does the Bach get this concept from of Jewish sovereignty? Right. Where does that come from? I'm not sure where he gets it from, but it seems like he is, if not the earliest among the earliest, the earliest sources that describes the Chiyuv as emanating from Jewish sovereignty and from the idea of the Melucha. It makes sense if you think about why you would tear Kriya for Arei Yehuda. Right. What is so? When you think about kedusha, there's no gemaras that talk about kedusha of Arei Yehuda. They talk about kedusha of Yerushalayim and the Makom HaMikdash. So it is distinct categorically. Okay, let's keep going. So let's read. Rav Schechter has a very well received article in Be'ikvei Hatzon, in which he talks about exactly this concept. The print is nice and large, so we should be able to read it. And I think we have time to read through it, and then we'll try to leave the least amount of time possible to get into that that political discussion that you mentioned, but how it comes up lahalacha. Okay, v'hine baroa et Beit HaMikdash b'chorbana shekorea pshita dekriya zuhi b'torat avelut al chorban habayit. So Rav Schechter lays out very simply what are the sources for this kriya. He says when you think about tearing kriya for the Beit HaMikdash, very obviously it's because of Avelut al Chorban Habayit. Ach beroa Arei Yehuda b'Chorbanan tanu ha'achronim im hakriya hi b'torat Avelut al Chorban va'avdan Malchut Yisrael, like what we saw from the Bach, shebe'eretz Yehuda haita ikar ha'melucha shel Yisrael, o she'eretz Yehuda yesh la yichud memshala shedina kishcheino shel makom kedi'ita b'gemara Sanhedrin tanu rabbanan. Ein ma'avrin et hashanim ela b'Yehuda. Where do you do ibur shana? You do that specifically in the Yerusha of Shevet Yehuda. Ve'im ibruha b'Galil meuberet. Ve'heid Hananya ish ono. Im ibruha b'Galil ena meuberet. So you have a machloket among the Tanaim as to whether or not you can do ibur shana in a place other than Yehuda. Why is that relevant to us? I'm Rabbi Yehuda, Breder of Shimon ben Pazi. My taima de Hananya ish ono. Amar kra l'shcheino tidrishu uvata shama. Kol drisha sha'ata doresh lo yiyu ela b'shcheino shel makom. Okay, so what does that mean? Where is the dominion of Makom? Where is the dominion of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Specifically, in the place in which you can do the Ibur Shana, in the place in which the Jewish people can feel at home, which does what? Which effectively connects Arei Yehuda to Yerushalayim and to the Makom HaMikdash. If you're talking about where the Shechina resides, you can either look at that cutting off at Yerushalayim, or you can say that extends even beyond Yerushalayim to the Arei Yehuda. V'hinei nafka mina tuva ika bein shtei perushim elu. There's a clear distinction in halacha that's going to emanate from this dichotomy. Bizman she'arei Yehuda heim tachat shilton Yisrael, ach adayin ein hamikdash banui. When you have the Arei Yehuda that are underneath our sovereignty, even though the Beit HaMikdash hasn't been rebuilt, l'dat habach, she'inyan hakriya al Arei Yehuda b'chorbanan, hu b'torat avelut al avdan malchut Yisrael, that the functionality of the kriya comes from avdun ibdan malchut Yisrael, imkein, shapir katav habach l'shitato, which means that the Arei Yehuda nowadays, which are bigadol al shilton Yisrael, you don't have any reason to tear kriya. Ach lefi svarat halavush, which is the first source that we read, she inyan hakriya al Arei Yehuda hu me inyan avilut al churban hamikdash, that all three categories of avilut are connected and all stem from the Churban HaMikdash. She'af Arei Yehuda chashuvim kishcheino shel makom. Im kein, yesh makom lomar shekol zman she'amikdash adayin b'churbano, af al pi she'arei Yehuda him tachat shelton Yisrael, adayin tiyeh chovat hakriya kayemet. So Rav Shechter lays out very clearly in no uncertain terms this machloket, or let's say, I don't want to say machloket, but this simple, let's say, distinction between the reading of the Levush and the reading of the Bach. If you read the Bach, he says it's a function of sovereignty of the Jewish people, like David pointed out initially, and if it's a function of sovereignty of the Jewish people, we have sovereignty over Israel now, and we don't tear kriya outside of the fact that the Makom HaMikdash, the Beit HaMikdash itself, has been destroyed. But if the kriya for Arei Yehuda is a function of the Beit HaMikdash, then obviously these areas would still warrant kriya nowadays. It appears to be that the halacha, the accepted halachic practice, is like the Levush, because nobody these days tears kriya for anything other than, at the very least, the Beit HaMikdash. There might be people, has anyone here ever heard of somebody tearing kriya when he enters Yerushalayim? I haven't heard of it. It certainly is not a practice that I'm familiar with, but when it comes to tearing kriya at the Kotel, or tearing kriya when you see the Makom HaMikdash, this is something, like we said at the onset of the shiur, about, you know, at least 50% of the people do it, and we say that you do it so long as you haven't been there within 30 days, because then it's like seeing something for the first time, and you have a freshness to the Avelut. So now let's read Sakala. Yeah.
Gemara and Shofar are quoted in a separate directives. It didn't just say, basically just destroy, tear kriya and Arei Yehuda on Yerushalayim. It's like three separate halakha. Is it possible to see that there'd be some manifestation of the Beit HaMikdash and Yerushalayim is still before Korbanah?
Yeah, I think so. And I think that it's interesting that Rav Shechter actually, the second half of the essay goes through which category Yerushalayim should belong to. Does Yerushalayim belong to the category of Beit HaMikdash, or is there an element of like Shecheino, Makom Shecheino also to Yerushalayim, and maybe that's why nobody tears kriya in Yerushalayim these days?
But I'm saying the other way. The Beit HaMikdash was built, some manifestation was built, and you still do kriya because Yerushalayim wasn't totally Jewish in settled. Let's say we built a shul, you know, a miracle, we actually built a shul on our bike, and that actually coexisted. But there was still an Arab quarter, there would still be...
Possibly. I don't know, but possibly. Possibly. Let's go into the question that everybody's thinking about, which is the one that you mentioned. This is from our very own Rabbi Jachter, who asked, who wrote a very nice article on this concept. And this is an excerpt from the article. He writes, in May 2000, I asked both Rav Herschel Shechter, who was the author of Be'ikvei Atzon that we just read, and Rav Yehuda Henkin, whether one must tear kriya upon seeing Judean cities that are regrettably controlled by the Palestinian Authority, such as Bethlehem. Rav Shechter replied that one should tear upon these cities, as the existence of Jewish sovereignty over an area determines its status regarding kriya. So he writes, that one should actually tear Kriya. However, the status changed again in 2002. Following Operation Defensive Shield, this is after what I guess they refer to as the Second Intifada. It was right after I went to Israel for the year. I remember it was a very hard time. And then, let's say the status of the Tzahal's activity in the different areas of the West Bank changed dramatically when the Israeli army began a policy of re-entering Palestinian-controlled cities when necessary to fight terror. Rav Schechter told Rav Ezra Frazier, who's the co-author of Rabbi Jachter's books, that he believes the obligation to tear Kriya remains in effect even while Israeli troops temporarily control a Judean city, for they do not actually govern it. So this is why I said it's a sticky issue having nothing to do with the politics. How do you define Jewish sovereignty? Because we have the ability and the might to go into any area that we want to, even if it's controlled by the PA. So does that constitute sovereignty, or is it something where we have the ability to flex our muscles in a pikuach nefesh fashion, but we don't really have the ability to say we are sovereign over those lands? So this is obviously a touchy issue. Rav Schechter's psak halacha is that we still would have to tear Kriya just because we send our army in there to root out terrorists doesn't mean that that we have sovereignty over that area. Rav Henkin, though, argued that one should not tear Kriya upon seeing these cities, as he deems it illogical. Now look at what he says: to refrain from tearing Kriya upon seeing Yerushalayim, while tearing when seeing a Judean city. One should consult a competent rabbi for guidance regarding this question. So obviously this is the type of issue where halacha lemaisa, it can go in a number of different directions. The very last source, which we only have a few minutes for, I think is probably the most telling. Rabbi Eliezer Melamed is living in Har Bracha. So he is living in, as when you talk about the settlements, Har Bracha is as settlement as any settlement could ever be. We actually have cousins that live there. Rabbi Elazar Melamed is not just a tremendous Talmud Chacham, but his Svarim Pnine Halacha are the by far and away the most widely read and accepted Halacha Lama'aseh Svarim in Eretz Yisrael today. So people who are both Dati, not Dati, Dati Lumi, every shade of Jewish people who follows Halacha accepts his Svarim. He's widely accepted as one of the certainly when it comes to Psak Halacha Gedolei Hador. And he writes the following, which is very interesting and very unexpected in the context of everything we've read so far. So he writes, I'm taking it out of context, but the article is inside of Pnine Halacha. He has one volume of Pnine Halacha on specifically laws related to living in Eretz Yisrael today. And he writes in regard to Teren Kriya, Aval Nira Sheroi L'chol Yehudi L'kayim Et Hadin Kihil Chato L'Likroa L'fachot Pam Achat B'chayav Al Riyat Makom HaMikdash. Which is fascinating. Where does he get this from? He doesn't write where he gets it from, but he says, what's the halacha lemaisa? Every Jew should tear Kriya once. Interesting. And he writes, V'im yirtze lahachmir, nachon sheyikra et begado, b'chol pam shelo ra'a et makom hamikdash shloshim yom. So this is like what we say, the shloshim yom, that it becomes like a new seeing of the makom hamikdash. V'yul ratzon, sheyibana beit hamikdash b'mhera b'yameinu. But what's interesting here is he essentially is accepting the fact that halacha lemaisa, most Jewish people, when they get to Arei Yehuda, for sure they're not tearing Kriya. Even when they get to Yerushalayim, they're not tearing Kriya. And even when they see the Makom HaMikdash, most people are not tearing Kriya every time. But he writes, every single Jewish person, at least once in their life, should feel the feeling of Avelut for the Beit HaMikdash. And he ends it with something that's appropriate for us to end it with, as I see the crowd is gathering outside for the 9:50 Marav. Yul Ratzon Sheyibana Beit HaMikdash B'mhera B'yameinu. Hopefully this will be something that will be academic and not halacha lemaisa for us very soon. And go ahead.
We're going to take off.